239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoon's name. So we're trying to get the satellite, the Dixie cup and the string and everything else. So hopefully, if everything works, Drew is going to press a button. And we're going to talk with the president of the Indiana University System, who is thousands of miles away, not in, on Mars, but he is in South Africa. It is part of his two-week trip to Ghana, Kenya, and South Africa. First trip to Africa by a sitting Indiana University president in more than 20 years. And with that, Dr. Michael McRobbie. How you doing, Doc?
I'm doing well, Amos. I can hear you pretty well, actually.
Actually, it sounds like you're calling from Bloomington. That's how good the signal is.
No, I'm really in South Africa.
Which city? Where are you today?
In Cape Town.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's in the evening in Cape Town because of the time difference.
What brings the president of Indiana University all the way over to the motherland? What is the goal of this visit?
Well, the principal reason is we want to build international opportunities both for our students, Indiana University students, and to help further internationalize the university. We're looking to build partnerships with universities in South Africa and Kenya and Ghana that will help support more of our students studying abroad in Africa, especially at a time when Africa is really starting to take off in various ways economically. And we're also looking to attract African students to Indiana University and to support faculty research between faculty from these universities. That's the general aim of this trip. But one specific aim we have is to visit our fabulous program in Kenya, the MPATH program, which you probably right. know about, which is the huge AIDS prevention and treatment facility in Eldoret, Kenya, which has now been in action for probably well over 20 years and has treated hundreds of thousands of patients there and serves an area of now over 3 million people. It's something we're enormously proud of at Indiana University, and I'll be the first IU president ever to have visited that program.
Programs like AMPATH, is this the kind of research that, you know, helps to enhance the work that's done at our IU Medical School here in Indianapolis and can take that research and then use it through AMPATH to help countries like Kenya and Ghana and South Africa?
Yes, absolutely. The beauty, I think, of the AMPATH program, and we're really starting to understand that, is that in many ways it's sort of replicable. That is, there's so much we've learned from this program that we believe there are opportunities and possibilities for replicating it elsewhere. Interestingly, we had a meeting with the South African Minister for Higher Education, mm-hmm. and we raised this the collaboration that we had in Kenya with AMPATH. He was extremely interested. He thought that this may provide opportunities for looking at learning from our experience there in certain areas of South Africa. So that's one great outcome that we intend to be following up on as soon as we get back.
As you've talked to people in education in South Africa, do they have the similar problem that we have here in the United States, here in Indiana, where high school students aren't fully prepared for the rigors of college? They have to do the remediation thing. Is that something that you're seeing on your visit in Africa?
Yeah, it is a little, and they say that that is a pretty significant problem for them. On the other hand, their higher education system, from what we've seen, really seems to be booming. The numbers of students, and of course now it's all the universities are fully multiracial. They're expanding. We were today at the University of the Western Cape, and there's been an enormous amount of construction and expansion that has happened at that university, and that was historically a black and colored institution, and it's of course been opened up, and it has now joined the top ranks of the research universities in South Africa, which is really an enormously impressive achievement. We had a very good visit to that university as well. Bishop Tutu was the chancellor of that university, I think, for over 20 years until he finally decided to retire just a few years ago.
On this tour, South Africa, Ghana, Kenya, does this open up opportunities from students from those countries, particularly students of color, to be able to come over here at Indiana University, either at the undergraduate and graduate level? And is the government making it easier for students from overseas to come to American universities, come to Indiana University to study?
That certainly, I can't speak yet for Kenya and Ghana because I haven't been there yet, but that certainly appears to be the case in South Africa. The discussions we've had indicate that the government here is very interested in encouraging more of their students to spend at least part of their graduate work in the U.S. That doesn't necessarily mean doing the full degree, but getting some of the experience of U.S.-style graduate education, a semester, a year, or something like that. Brazil has a similar program, and the South African government is looking very seriously at something similar to that. And we, of course, would delighted to host more students from South Africa at IU.
We're talking live from South Africa with the president of Indiana University, Dr. Michael McRobbie. I understand that on your itinerary, you were going to be visiting Crystal House Academy in Cape Town. Have you already done that?
No, that's tomorrow morning. Angus, we're visiting it first thing in the morning. We're going to visit Crystal House. I know Crystal Vahan well,
right?
And I've talked to her often about the various Crystal Houses around the world. But I don't want to put words in the mouth, but I think this is the one that she's maybe the most proud of. So
we're really looking forward
to seeing this.
Better than the one here?
I'm talking about the international one.
What, in terms of these kinds of visits by major American universities overseas, particularly to the third world, how important is it to the institution? How important is it to those countries?
I think it's extremely important to the countries because it shows that the institution is serious. If the president of a large American university is prepared to travel to this country and to many other countries to become personally engaged in the exploration of building partnerships or signing new agreements. We did that in Johannesburg a couple of days ago with the business school at the University of Pretoria, which is the number one business school in South Africa, and we'll be signing a few more agreements when we're in Kenya and so on. And what this is a demonstration of seriousness, and it also enables me to see firsthand what's working, what might work, what's not, what are the pitfalls, what are the things to be avoided, what are the opportunities, and so on. And frankly, nothing really beats being here on the ground and actually seeing all these institutions and also building the personal relationships with the leadership of some of these institutions. I've over the years become quite close to a number of the leaders of institutions internationally that we've dealt with. Of course, they turn over after a period, but that can really help you get things done with these institutions.
Well, yeah, as you're talking to these institutions in Kenya and Ghana and South Africa, are they giving you any tips on how you can improve educational quality and lower tuition for the students of Indiana University? Because that's a big issue back at home.
Yeah, and those are the kinds of issues that are just as important to them as well. I think what we're learning from them are ways of approaching some of the disciplines with less resources. I think there are opportunities there for us to learn about maybe how to scale certain things that we do. One of the areas that I don't know if you're familiar with the same as one, but one of the areas that we are immensely strong in is language teaching. We've discovered we're probably teaching more African languages than most South African universities. Hmm. So at the moment, for example, if you exclude Arabic, we're teaching 6 African languages. And over recent years, we have taught 7 of the 10 major official languages of South Africa. We've taught something like over 50 African languages since the founding of our superb African studies program about 50 years ago. So we have a history of engagement academically with the continent, especially in South Africa and West Africa, and of course with the AMPATH program in Kenya, that we think would rival most of the just about any of the very best universities in the United States, and we're particularly proud of our expertise in the languages.
President McRobbie, is the challenge back here at home in Indiana, particularly to improve the diversity of African American students on the Bloomington campus, is that IU has to be more aggressive that to get the African American scholars? You guys have to be as aggressive as Coach Crean is aggressive getting basketball players.
Yes, absolutely, Amos. And we've with a number of retirements, I've made some new appointments. Dr. James Wimbush, I think, is with you or will be with you, and he is the new Vice President of Diversity, Equity and Multicultural Affairs, and also remains Dean of the Graduate School, where he's done an outstanding job. And I've given him a charge of really redoubling our efforts. I put new funding into his office, and I'm looking forward to what the plans that James is going to bring to me in the next month or so to look at what we can do to just more aggressively improve the diversity of not only our undergraduate student base but also our graduate student base. And what's so important there is that's where the future faculty members come from.
President McRobbie, I know anytime somebody travels and you're on a travel journey, you're in a bubble, so sometimes you don't know what everything that's going back home. There's been a controversy in Bloomington about a student group with views that are abhorrent to African Americans, Jews, other probably to most Hoosiers. I'm going to be talking a little bit more in depth with Vice President Wimbush in just a minute about those issues. But how difficult is it? You have been a university administrator for a number of years. How difficult is it to balance academic freedom, First Amendment and first expression rights with groups that their views most reasonable human beings can't stand?
Well, I know in general terms about this issue, but mm-hmm. I'm not in a position to be fully briefed on this issue yet. But the key point I would want to make is that Indiana University really deplores in the strongest possible terms and frankly despises any views that espouse racism or racial supremacy of any kind. I will, as soon as I return from Africa, I intend to within days get a full briefing on this. And I certainly share the concern that you and your listeners have about this, but it's difficult for me to comment much further until I'm fully briefed on this. Now, of course, there are other leaders on the Bloomington campus who can provide, I think, more information about this. And Vice President Wimbush, I believe, is with you.
Yes,
he can probably provide you with more information. But this, just to repeat, Amos, this is these kinds of views, it is really not acceptable, and as I said, we deplore them in the strongest possible terms.
And the other thing is, so that while you're over there, are you telling everybody that you're visiting to find a satellite so they can watch the football game? Is tonight? Y'all are playing.
No, but I think that game is going to be at something like 2 o'clock in the morning. So I'm probably not going to get the result until I wake up. But one thing I do want to mention that I think is interesting is that we hope, the weather's actually not very good here at the moment, but we hope on Saturday to visit Robben Island, which I think, is where Nelson Mandela was in prison for nearly 20 years. And that of course has got an almost iconic status in South Africa. And we had dinner last night with the director of the Robben Island, what is now a museum. And he spent time at Indiana University and loved his time in Bloomington. So that just shows you the reach of Indiana University around the world.
Dr. Michael McRobbie, the president of the Indiana University System, live from South Africa, which means that the South African government has better telephone lines than some people use around here in Indiana. I think the South African government needs to be commended. This is out. See, some of my listeners would think, oh, the phone service can't be that great. This is better than it is most times in Indiana. Have a a safe journey while you're in South Africa, Kenya, and Ghana, and hopefully we'll get you on the program in the fourth quarter of the year.
Yeah, that's certainly my goal, Amos. And thank you very much. Really appreciate it. I'm delighted we could do this.
Thank you. The president of Indiana University, live from South Africa, Michael McRobbie, in the studio, live here in Indianapolis, is the new Indiana University System Vice President for Diversity, Equity, and Multicultural Affairs, James Winbush. Welcome.
It's good to be here. Thank you, Amos.
Let me ask you the specifics. There, as I understand it, is a group of five Indiana University students who have formed an organization that espouses views of, they sound like they hate everybody, an alleged white supremacist group, and they've met the basic requirements, five legitimately registered students at Indiana University. They had to set up a constitution. That's the basic requirement to be a recognized student organization.
That is indeed the recommendation, the requirement. This is the Traditionalist Youth Network. Mm-hmm. They are a group that did submit five names. They did indeed sign the forms. They have a constitution, actually have a copy of that constitution. The constitution was indeed reviewed by Indiana University, but what it really boils down to is that they signed the form. Mm-hmm. This group and any other student club or organization, they're at Indiana University. They're not really of Indiana University. Mm-hmm. Indiana University does not in any way endorse an organization or a club. The only two organizations that are actually a part of Indiana University would be the Union Board and the Student Government Association. Mm-hmm. So this particular group, they met the criteria in the sense that they submitted the constitution, they submitted five names, mm-hmm. but that's all that it really means.
The other thing is, and I got a hold of the copy of the code of conduct that all members of, particularly students, the code of students' rights, responsibilities, and conduct, and these are the things that you will hold students personally responsible for if they violate this. These are acts of personal misconduct that occur on university property, including but not limited to academic and administration buildings, the residence halls, the athletic and recreational facilities, and other university service property, such as fraternities and sororities. And not only are students prohibited from having weapons. They're prohibited from conduct that is lewd, indecent, and obscene. They're prohibited from disorderly conduct, including obstructive and disruptive behavior that interferes with teaching, research, administration, or other university or university-authorized activities, actions that endanger oneself and others. They cannot act with violence. They cannot sell any firearms, possess any weapon or potential weapon. They cannot aid, encourage, or participate in a riot. They cannot do any kind of harassment. They cannot do any kind of stalking or hazing of any kind, whether the behavior is carried out verbally, physically, electronically, or in written form. No physical abuse of any person, including the use of physical force or violence. No verbal abuse. And I was really struck by this. And it says specifically, express or implied words that injure that person or damage his or her property, or fighting words. That are spoken face-to-face as a personal insult to the listener or listeners in personally abusive language, inherently likely to provoke a violent reaction by the listener or listeners to the speaker. That would include most known racial epithets, because those, by definition, are fighting words. This is much stronger than I even thought back in the day when I went to school, which I think was just 10 rules. Don't cheat, don't have weapons, don't hit nobody.
We try to be as comprehensive as possible. Let me say that we absolutely, as President McRobbie has said, absolutely in the strongest language possible, detest the beliefs of this organization. We do not in any way support their message. We do not support their beliefs. They are abhorrent. They are disgusting. They are sickening. Mm-hmm. With that said, we are a public state institution. We try to have an inclusive environment that provides for the civil discourse of ideas, discussion, debate. Right. We want to protect the free speech rights of all individuals at Indiana University because we are about having intellectual discourse. Mm-hmm. But the message of this group is not a message that is consistent with our values. We detest it. Now, the incident that took place, the march from Jordan River, from the bridge there through campus onto Boxcar Books, which is about two.
Is this Boxcar Books, this bookstore? That's not a campus, official no. campus bookstore.
No.
That's it's like a bookstore in town.
Exactly. It's about two blocks away from campus. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I was in my office when I heard that they were at the sample gates. I went out to observe what was happening. They had already passed through, and I talked to one of my colleagues who was there who witnessed the whole thing. He said that they just literally walked through on their way to Boxcar. I actually went to Boxcar. They were there met by, about 60 or 70 counter-protesters. There was an exchange between the four, and it was just four individuals, only one identified.
And this was off campus.
This was off campus. That's right. And only one was identified as an IU student. Mm-hmm. And I observed for a while and then returned to campus. We have had complaints from individuals regarding this group, their message. They did engage in chalking where they write on the sidewalks.
Is that allowed on campus? Groups can chalk on right on campus like nursery school or something?
Yes, we do allow that. We do not allow chalking on buildings, mm-hmm. on walls, or in places where they cannot post student group messages. So right. they were actually within the confines of our rules, but the messages were nasty. They mm-hmm. were rude. They were not the types of messages that are consistent.
Did it come close to fighting words?
They came right to the edge.
Right up to the line.
What we've discovered, we've spent some time on their website, and even on their website, they say to make sure you stay within the rules of the organization. Mm-hmm. This is a smart group. It's not a group that started Indiana University. We've traced it back to the White Union that was founded at Towson University. Okay. And so this is a group that has a lot of support outside of Indiana, and they seem to understand what our rules are.
239-1310. We'll take a break. When we come back, we will talk with the Vice President for Diversity, Equity, and Multicultural Affairs, James Winbush. He's the new vice president in that position at Indiana University. We'll talk about, because this is the time of year when universities, even though they just finished enrolling everybody, this is when they start looking at the class of, what's going to be, 2018. See, they be working. We're going to ask them, what are they doing to try to increase the number of us in? Now, I want y'all to get students from Ghana and Kenya and South Africa, but I want some folks from Brightwood. I want some folks from Pike Township. I want some folks from the South Side, too. We'll talk with Jane Winbush about that. You may have questions. 239-1310. 239-1310. It's Afternoons with Amos. After these. Monday, there's no show. It's Labor Day. Tuesday, we'll be live from Channel 6. Tomorrow, code enforcement. 239-1310. 239-1310 with James Winbush. He's the new Vice President for Diversity, Equity, and Multicultural Affairs. There's going to be a lot of talk over this next academic year. Here in the Indianapolis area about the issue of are African American students prepared for the rigors of a college, of a university like Indiana University. Is one of the challenges the IU system faces is there's still a disconnect between the general community that sees their kids and grandkids getting a Core 40 diploma or even a general diploma, think that's, start part of the way to college. You guys, general diploma don't get you anywhere in Indiana University. It's got to be at all levels, it's got to be a Core 40. Is part of the challenge you all have educating the community on how the game is now played in terms of what kinds of academic background you need to be successful at, whether it's IU Bloomington or IU PUI or wherever?
Yes, indeed. One of my areas of strategic focus is outreach and advocacy. Mm-hmm. You're speaking to the outreach portion. What we want to do is to make sure that we make the community aware of the standards at Bloomington, what it takes to get into not just Bloomington, but all of our campuses, because we have excellent programs, excellent education at all of our campuses, but particularly in Bloomington, where we have had some successes, but we still struggle with making the student body more diverse. We want to make sure that we help communities to become prepared so that they have easy access to our programs. And so one of the things we will be working to do is to increase our community partnerships, to increase our pipeline types of initiatives that will help to make sure that not only are parents informed, that we work with also school systems to work with them so that we can partner together so the students are indeed prepared.
From the basic requirement to get in an Indiana university, what kind of scores you need now? Because I think people still have there's some people listening that still, it's a state school, all you got to do is have the diploma and walk in.
It's not quite that easy. It's not quite that easy. I can't tell you the specific SAT scores or other scores that are required.
But the days of just walking in is gone.
That's right. That is true. Mm-hmm. That is true. But there are many programs in high schools already where students are able to have college preparatory types of courses. Some of those courses can even transfer. And so there is a means for meeting the criteria through the preparation that high schools offer and through programs that we have. We have actually some summer programs where students can come and work on research that will help also prepare them and make them aware of our standards.
Are online courses starting to be big at IU, whether it's Bloomington or whether it's here in Indianapolis?
Throughout the entire university, on all of our campuses, it is a huge thing. We have a new office of online programs, and that office about a year ago, I believe it was on September 12th, received a huge amount of funding from the president because he recognizes that this is an important initiative for all of our campuses. And so what we're trying to do is to coordinate our online offerings. We're trying to make sure that in Bloomington and at IUPUI that we have an increase in the number of professional and graduate online programs. Mm. The regional campuses are focusing on undergraduate online programs. We have a huge number already. We expect that to increase significantly.
Is there a, particularly for graduate level, maybe for people that want to get back into college, or maybe they've got some Ivy Tech credits or some junior college credits, or maybe they started at Indiana University 5-10 years ago, they dropped out for whatever reason, but those credits are just kind of sitting there gathering dust, and they start to want to go back in. Is it harder for the adult learner to pick up on an online course as opposed to the student right out of school who may be doing more online at the high school level?
I don't think so. We have a lot of support systems, if you will, in place. The online mechanisms now are very user-friendly. Those have been revamped throughout the years. They're not like they used to be, say, in the late 90s when some online programs started. We're very advanced in our technology. They're very user-friendly. There's support, live individuals who will help individuals who start our programs to become familiar with how the online mechanisms work. I think it's much easier now than it used to be.
With the tightening standards for 21st century scholars, you're not going to have a 2.5. There is now means testing. Are there programs that Indiana University is going to be doing or adjusting your programs that work with 21st century scholars to maybe start touching them earlier at before they sign up at the middle school level?
What we want to do is make sure that first and foremost, parents are aware of 21st century scholars. We feel as though we've certainly done a decent job of getting the message out. We want to do even more because we feel as though there's still too many who are not familiar with the program and understand that you have to sign up early. Mm-hmm. With all that said, we have the largest class of 21st century scholars who just joined us this month. We have about 2,300 who have joined us in Bloomington. Those individuals, as you know, also have the covenant. So it means that not only is their tuition covered, but there's also other funding available so that there is virtually no out-of-pocket costs for these individuals.
Let me go to James right quick. I think he's on the subject of 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, how's it going?
Fine.
I want to ask a quick question. I know in a community, three or more, and you got the same flags, is considered as a gang. So why is it that the white supremacists can get together, get on YouTube, and get on campus? I thought it was law for that. I thought that was considered as terrorist or gang activity. So why are we not 10-fold coalition going after that? And I take my answer off there. Thank you.
Actually, there is no law that says, I think organized gang activity. And you've got to meet certain criteria for that, and there has to be criminal acts tied to that. So just three, first of all, at a university campus is a little different than being out in a neighborhood. It is normal for students to congregate in groups. That's normal on a college campus, whereas that would not be normal. The police would come and look at a group of 10 on a street corner in Indianapolis, a group of 10 on a corner on the IU campus, the police would say, oh, that's normal. That's a difference in the community.
Indeed. The other thing is that we did receive several incidents reports. Some were filed to my office, many to the Dean of Students on the Bloomington campus. We immediately had our various incidents teams. We have a racial incidents team. Mm-hmm. Racial bias incidents team, GLBT incidents team, all of the incidents teams went to work right away to basically investigate all of the charges.
Right.
And for all of the allegations, it takes about a week to 10 days. But if it is found that in any way the code of conduct was violated, then the one student that was part of the group will be brought before the Student Ethics Board.
Okay, that's like going to trial.
Exactly.
Let me go to Robin at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi. I had a question. Yeah. I just turned the radio on, so is someone there from 21st Century College?
No, someone's here from Indiana University.
Oh, okay.
What are you trying to find out about 21st Century Scholars?
Well, my children, I had them signed up for 21st Century Scholars. I filled out the paperwork and everything. And this is when I guess you could turn the forms into the school.
Mm-hmm.
Well, their principal never turned the forms in.
Uh-oh.
And so when, you know, I went trying to appeal and trying to talk to them, not really appeal because they never had the paperwork, but trying to get them the paperwork. You know, they were saying it's too late, and I guess that was my fault. And I'm like, no, it's the school's fault because they never turned the paperwork in. And so they tried to – basically, my children did not get what they were supposed to get because of the school. And there, two of them are in school, in college now, but they really need that. My son is in school right now needing financial aid. I mean, needing that 21st Century Scholars. My daughter is right now. She needs it as well. But they can't get it because the school did not turn the paperwork.
Did you ever complain to the leadership of that school about that principal?
yeah, right. No, the leadership of that school at that time was BS.
Is this a traditional public school or a charter?
It was a charter school. Like, yeah. Was just the biggest mess.
That was the biggest mess. Where do they go to college?
Anderson and Indiana State.
Have you talked to the people, the financial aid people at both of those places?
I have, but they are not, as far as like, you know, 21st Century Scholars goes, or because they're not, as far as helping like my son with housing, they're not budging with that.
You know, that principal should have been run on with a rail, but that's a whole nother.
It was him, but then also the leadership over him. Nobody was doing their job, so you know.
I would say as you keep doing it and try to figure out a way and talk to the financial aid people, see if they can increase work study, see if they can increase the kind of financial aid where it's not loan dependent, where it might be some work study. opportunities that could reduce the part of loan, or as they do better academically, then that gives the university, those universities some opportunities to increase that investment.
Okay. I will do that. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Let me go to 239-1310 to Ms. D. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to ask a question to the young man.
Yeah.
These kids that's graduating from school are not qualified for, they haven't been trained to qualify for college. And is any way that some of them can go to these schools and let them know what they have to have before they graduate? In the 12th grade or whatever, so a lot of these kids will know what they're getting because the counselors at these schools are not doing that anymore.
Yeah, mate, that's a great question. I know you guys have Upward Bound, which is usually junior going into senior. Any thought of moving Upward Bound earlier, freshman going into sophomore, even eighth grade going into ninth grade?
You know, those are some very good ideas. I know that our Office of Enrollment Management, they have a very close working relationship with the high schools, and they try to make sure the high schools understand what students need in order to be eligible for consideration at Indiana University. And, of course, Upward Bound is something that we can consider, but our people within the Office of Enrollment Management, getting them to continue their work and to expand their reach to high schools, I think would also be very helpful. They do a fantastic job, and they have formed some very good relationships, but to the extent that we can work with the high schools to make sure that students understand what is required, what is necessary, we want to do that.
We're with James Winbush. He is Vice President for Diversity, Equity, and Multicultural Affairs. How long have you been in the IU system?
22 years.
Uh-oh. So he's been there a while.
Indeed.
And
indeed.
You were in at the Kelly School of Business doing what?
Exactly. First and foremost, a professor, but I've also run the MBA program, the doctoral program. I was department chair of the Department of Management and Entrepreneurship before I became dean of the graduate school.
Let me go to Brenda at 239-1310. Hi there.
Good afternoon, Amos. How are you?
I'm fine.
Hello, Mr. Winbush.
Hello.
I have a question. How come those students, individual students, don't file federal hate crimes against those students who are participating in those types of acts? Because anytime there's a racial issue involved and there's intimidation, coercion, harassment, those are definitions of a hate crime. So why is the university not encouraging individual students to file these federal complaints?
Because, as I mentioned earlier, the student group is very smart. They're part of a larger network, and they are very careful as to what they say and what they do. They go right up to the edge, and then they stop. And as I mentioned, we are indeed investigating what was said, what was on their signs, but they are a group that has studied the law. They have studied the rules, the policies of the university. They're very smart in their actions. They've gone right up to the edge, but we are investigating, and we may find that they have indeed violated the code of conduct, and we will indeed take action.
And may I make this last response?
Mm-hmm.
The reason why I'm asking this question, because I know a student right now who wants to go to IUPUI, but the child is hesitant about going because of what is being said. And they need to know or be reassured that they have protection out there, because this thing could get out of hand and that something can happen. And we should not wait for something like that to happen.
That's a good point. What for people that are hearing about this, or sometimes they're hearing about it firsthand, secondhand, fifth hand, what advice would you give to parents, grandparents, folks in the community?
We have been closely monitoring the situation. As a matter of fact, early that morning, the city of Bloomington.
And this was on Wednesday morning, I think, when this happened. Was this happening Wednesday or Tuesday?
Tuesday morning. Mm-hmm. The city of Bloomington contacted my office, the IU police. we were very vigilant, carefully monitoring the actions of students that day. We continue to closely monitor it. What we want is an environment where our students, our faculty, our staff can feel as though they can do their very best work, a safe, nurturing environment. And we are working very hard to ensure that that indeed happens. Let it be known that we have been monitoring. We will continue to monitor because it is important for us, for our students, to be able to engage in civil discourse and do their very best work.
Let me go to Imhotep at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, Amos, how you doing?
I'm fine.
All right. My comment is a little bit off of what happened at IPY. When you get a chance, just bring up to speed what happened there, because I don't know. But I want to go back to talking to the gentleman in South Africa. And,
he's gone, but that's...
they can answer this question.
Okay.
Why are we so much focused on bringing others into populate spots at our schools, in our country? And I've been in a lot of countries. I don't see them so focused on taking us and populating and killing their numbers off, bringing us into their schools, when we have a lot of people here who need to go to school, who can't afford to go. I, for a fact, looked this up myself. The U.S. Customs Service, if they claim political asylum, people can get free housing, free apartments. Then you're giving state tuition to illegal immigrant. How do they I've been in a lot of countries. I don't know any country I've been to where you can get rewarded for breaking the law. I do not understand this for nothing. You guys explain that to me. My kids, my nephews, my young people who are born here and raised here, who got a scuffle to come up with a dime to go to school, when you're rewarding people who break
Hold on a second. First of all, James Wimbush, if a student comes here from overseas to attend Indiana University, they have to enter this country legally?
Yes, they do. And there are various requirements, visa requirements, that is scrutinized very carefully by Homeland Security. There are students who want to come who can't come because of not meeting the requirements for Homeland Security.
Are the same student aid policies work for foreign students as they do for American students, for Indiana students?
They are different. I can't speak to the details of those forms of aid and whatnot, but they are indeed different.
But they pay more.
They do.
Because they're considered an out-of-state student.
Exactly.
Okay. Wait a minute. Hold on, Amos. My mother's an attorney in Chicago. Mm-hmm. She represented a couple in mm-hmm. a case. They were filing bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. They went to Northwestern University. Well, I don't know what school actually they went to. But these particular people were filing bankruptcy on about $65,000. One was a student. One didn't work. Mm-hmm. Okay. They're staying downtown off Lakeshore Drive. And their reported income supposedly $45,000 with no job. Someone's giving them some money. Okay, They're not citizens.
But in Motel, we're talking Indiana.
It's done here. We just saw Ball State give that guy my rack, all that free money and stuff because he can decipher code. We just saw Indiana say they turned back on the law saying that they're going to give illegals now in-state tuition. Can they just go back on that?
We're talking Indiana University, not Indiana State, Ball State.
No, I said the state of Indiana.
I don't think
that students can get in-state tuition that are here illegally now.
I don't think the state of Indiana, I don't think Mike Pence has said that.
I read it.
What school?
That's for all state institutions in the state of Indiana.
I don't think so.
Okay, I'll tell you what. You look it up. I'll call you back Tuesday, and I guarantee you find it.
I'm not going to argue with you. My gut says no, but it would seem to me that kind of policy, James Wimbush would definitely have heard about it because that would have crossed his desk. in terms
okay,
of that.
Okay, thanks, Amos.
All right, I appreciate it. 239-1310. But that's part of some of the information that needs to be cleared up on these kinds of things.
Exactly. And for international students, one of the requirements is that they show that they can afford the cost of education when they come here. That's part of the set of requirements that they must meet.
Let me go quickly to 239-1310 and Donna. Hi there.
Hi, Amos. Do you remember, it's been some years ago, there were a group of African-American students that came on your show from IU, and the discourse was there was a historic painting that was in a room that I think they were using as an overflow for classrooms. Mm-hmm. And this image was a historic painter who had a scene of the Klan riding through mm-hmm. with the cover on their face and the yeah. torch in their hand on horseback. And I think the students' concern at that time was that they felt uncomfortable in the classroom with that image.
And as you were talking about it, Vice President Wimbush was nodding his head. He remembers that.
And so I think, well, after hearing Vice President Wimbush talk about nurturing an environment and things of that nature, I think the outcome was that the image was, they decided that it would stay there. And so I'm just curious today, I don't know how many years ago, maybe you can refresh my memory, is the image still there? And would, and if it is, does that, is that a concern under the description of having this environment that students feel safe and comfortable, et cetera?
That's a great question.
Indeed. Our former president, the legendary Herman Wells, is the one who commissioned Benton to create a mural in, I believe it's Woodburn Hall. I've never taught in that particular building, but I believe it's Woodburn Hall. And he commissioned him to do a mural that would depict the historical relevance of the state of Indiana, if I remember correctly. And what was decided was that the mural, if you take out of context just that particular portion of the mural that relates to the KKK, then it certainly indeed is offensive. But when you understand the historical context and the other drawings that are with that, then you come to understand better why the mural is there, why it was done. Every student who has a class in that particular room within that building, there is literature that is provided. There is, I believe, a video that talks about the history of the mural, why it's there, the significance of elements within it, mm-hmm. so that people understand what it's all about.
I appreciate it. Lathan will be our last caller before we take the caller. We looked up on the internet. Notre Dame University announced a policy where they would admit undocumented aliens at the undergraduate level. And that is a policy that that private Catholic university is taking. It keeps in the mission of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, which is strongly supportive of the DREAM Act, strongly supportive of immigration reform. That's a private university. That's not the public state-supported schools, because I think if any state-supported school like Indiana University would do that, the governor would start screaming bloody murder, and he'd be joined by at least 100 members of the General Assembly. Lathan, hi there.
Yeah, how are we doing? This is Lathan Johnson.
Yes.
How you doing, VP Wimbush?
Hi, Lathan. It's good to hear you.
I just wanted to clarify what was just said about the undocumented tuition. Mm-hmm. What happened was the students who were grandfathered in, so undocumented immigrant students who started at Indiana University who were receiving in-state tuition and then had that in-state tuition stripped from them were grandfathered in and readmitted their in-state tuition. And then that doesn't affect, though, the incoming undocumented students. So that's just a little clarification on that. But then also, I just wanted to say that with this whole the traditional youth network, mm-hmm. I just wanted to clarify for just everyone on the air that, and I don't know if it was said already because I was in and out, but there's only one Indiana University student who was present at on behalf of the Youth Traditionalist Network, and then the other three were from, you know, national headquarters and all that. And so my issue with that is that the IDS put an entire page of coverage specifically for one Indiana University student, and then this kind of gets away from the main issues at hand at the university, and that's what we're going to do with, and VP Wimbush and I have had a meeting on this, with the completion of underrepresented students and making sure students are, you know, academically and professionally ready for once they graduate and move on to the next level. And so I just hate to see the focus of what's really important being lost, because everyone's focusing on this hate crime and, you know, white supremacy, when the real issue is, you know, are students getting jobs, are students being academically and professionally prepared, and are students graduating in 4 years and, you know, doing everything that they need to be successful as individuals. Because, you know, this is one student. And, you know, even though there can be, you know, plenty more students backing them,
right,
but, you know, we're letting one student influence an entire conversation and influence and change what is really important, and the message that my group, that Diversity Coalition, fought for, and the message that many faculty, staff, and everyone fought for.
Leighton Johnson, let me ask you and bring the audience up to speed. Leighton Johnson was one of the folks behind the IU Diversity Coalition that demonstrated back in the spring at Indiana University. So you're saying to our larger community, it's a sideshow. Don't take your eyes off the prize.
Exactly.
Because when I read the article about what happened earlier this week in the Indiana Daily Student, you know, I wasn't seeing, you know, the outrage from the African American student community or the minority community in Bloomington. I think you guys were right up in there. You saw it for what it is. Up here in the big city, you know, we were looking at, you know, we're shocked that bigots are down there. And, you know, but we appreciated that Vice President Wimbush is here and that the president of the university addressed it, because if he didn't address it, there was going to be, you know, heck to pay. And you can rest assured he's coming back when I can look him in his eye and deal with that. But how are things going under this new guy?
Well, just one last point on the white supremacy group.
Yeah.
And actually, it was a very swift response from the university. And really, like, not many African-American students on the campus were talking about it, because the search for the university was, we're against this group.
Okay.
You know, and that's the feeling we got. So, you know, people felt safe that it's, okay, the university has our back. You know, there's statements from, you know, all kinds of faculty, our student government. We did a talk at the student orientation saying that, you know, the student government, which is over all student organizations, doesn't condone that message. So, you know, it's a sense of the university isn't so much backing this. But, you know, what's been going on since the rally, you know, there's been some positive changes on the campus. Have had meetings with VP Wimbush and Vice Provost McCrory. And it really seems like a lot of the issues are being resolved. So it's definitely positive right now.
All right.
And we just want to make sure that it keeps moving forward.
All right, Leighton Johnson, they got a broom out. They're trying to sweep me out of the studio. I appreciate it. I appreciate that you had the last word today. Vice President James Wimbush of Indiana University, thank you. And thank the President, Michael McRobbie, all the way from South Africa he had to be in the American Embassy. That connection was so good. Tomorrow, my Friday friend will be here. How do we talk today? By talking for the first time ever with the Department of Code Enforcement. What do they do in the neighborhood and why do they do it? I'm Amos Brown. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow live at 1.